शबनम में अपने यार से मतलब.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Thank you very much for everything that you did during our mini fun drive this morning. We did very well. We made our goal. We're well over $290,000, and all is looking good. So we thank you very much. You can certainly keep it coming, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get started and talk about the news of the day. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, in the house. Good morning, Ira. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, everyone. I have to tell you a brief story. I was on Long Island much of this week, and I was listening to the program in the morning on the WAMC app, by the way, which is a terrific resource. But you were reminding the listeners that don't worry, the panel is going to be on at 10 o'clock. And Ray said something like that, the panel will be on full bore. And I stopped and thought, now, what does he mean by that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized that if he had known I was not going to be on, full bore wouldn't have counted. But
Well, we meant, of course,
no, I know
digging deep and going
exactly.
In. But, you know, and so far, I think, and I say this lovingly amongst all of my panelist friends, I don't think we've had a boring one yet this week.
And it's a lot shorter. So
well, at least you're not a fully bore one.
Yes, right.
Yes. CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Mulligan, is here. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
I'm humid. I can't stand it.
It's
like
it's
the, sticky. You get that, like, that feels like temperature on your phone. I'm like 72 degrees, feels like 900. It's just, ugh.
I had one. I was in the car with air conditioning on, and my phone said, I'm just going to take a few minutes out from charging so I can recoup from the weather.
Well, my husband doesn't believe in air conditioning. We have a farmhouse, so we don't have it. But, you know, you could put a unit in your window, and it's apparently too early in the season for that. So I feel like a giant sponge. It's awful.
I know love is what love is, but I think that would be a deal breaker for me. Kelly and I are on the same air conditioning plateau, so... And Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, joins us. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
I hate air conditioning. We're cold 10 months of the year. 2 months of the year, I can walk around and not be cold. Give that to me. Turn the air conditioning off. And when it's humid, my hair poofs up like crazy.
Ira and I have the same problem.
Yes, well, and Joe and I, of course, understand that this particular studio is very cold, and that's because, Joe?
It keeps the comedy fresh.
Exactly. David Letterman, 1987.
All right, let's get to it. Welcome all. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your patience. Thanks for moving things around to accommodate our schedule this week. I really appreciate it. So, dozens killed in strike on UN school, Israel says, was used by Hamas. And this was the story that broke overnight. Actually, we were one of those stories that we were that came in the phone in the middle of the night. Israeli fighter jets struck a UN school in central Gaza that the Israel Defense Forces said housed a Hamas compound and killed at least 35 people, according to the Commissioner General of the UNRWA. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Children were among the many casualties of the attack, according to a spokesman at the hospital there where bodies were brought. The Washington Post talked to the hospital where it was estimated that there were dozens wounded. An IDF spokesman said at a news conference that 20 to 30 Hamas and Islamic Jihad fighters were operating from a compound inside the school. The strike had previously been called off twice to limit civilian casualties, and he wasn't aware of civilian deaths resulting from Thursday's attack. What should we make of this latest round of violence, Heather?
I think that when we step back and reflect on everything that's happened, these kinds of incidents, of course, reflect very poorly on Israel. This is a compound that had been previously attacked. And on the flip side of that, it does really put a fine point on the fact that Hamas has been using civilians as a shield and placing them in the way of harm, or using them to try and prevent, basically to secure their own safety. But I think it's more likely that they are orchestrating to some degree situations where Israel, in an effort to get rid of Hamas, has to go through civilians. And it's just awful. It just is heartbreaking. And I think that it's going to be one of those things that, you know, history is not going to be kind to Israel when it comes down to, you know, when this is all over. And hopefully it'll be over soon.
Judy Patrick.
Yeah, this just ratchets up the tensions out in the Middle East and in the U.S., where this is a raging political discussion. They have 52 people dead. The issue, I think, hasn't been clarified whether or not they used U.S. bombs to actually do this. That would, again, increase the pressure on the Biden administration to determine whether or not this, you know, imaginary red line has been crossed, and whether or not how we should proceed. It comes on the heels of, I'm not sure whether they've set a date for Netanyahu to come before Congress and speak, but that's another politically charged moment. It seems like things are only escalating at this point instead of being tamped down like they should be. I always have thought of the Israeli army as this precise, smart, well informed by good intelligence, and it surprised me the fact that sometimes they have to use such heavy-handed attacks to get what they wanted, instead of like surreptitiously invading the school and capturing the people that they want to capture. I know that's perhaps naive of me, but I wish there would be more of that and less of the dropping big bombs.
Well, it's just as Heather said, it's a tragedy. It's unfortunate. Israel is not going to come out of this victorious, even if in fact they meet their goal of eliminating Hamas, which seems to be an unrealistic goal at best. And on the world stage, Israel is isolating itself. But on the other hand, as they say, we're not living their lives of every day being afraid of the terrorists invading them and another October 7th developing. So it's clear that Netanyahu is hell-bent on continuing this war until he feels it's been completed to his satisfaction and Israel's satisfaction. And I'm not sure what's going to be left of that region after this is finally over. But Israel will, I think, fortunately, or not fortunately, but Israel inevitably is going to wind up looking like the bully, and October 7th will be the afterthought here.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And you just have to wonder what's next, and because you hear the stories where some glimmer of hope is made with for a ceasefire that the Biden administration and working and trying to elevate the talks, and yet then we have something like this, and then that all goes away, and then we work for a few more weeks, a few more months to try to get back to that point. There is very much a one step forward.
Well, if miraculously they came to a ceasefire tomorrow, and both sides upheld the ceasefire, and weeks and months went along in relative calm, all it would take is one or two terrorists to shoot somebody in the Israeli side of the border, and Israel will no doubt retaliate, and here we go again. And that's been the history of that region for years and years and years. And this is a dispute that's, 2,000 years old?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's also the factor of it can't disregard, you know, Biden made this announcement over the weekend because he's in trouble with his left flank and needs something to give here. This is the opposite of what he needed. Netanyahu's leadership is in trouble. If he were to agree with the negotiated ceasefire that supposedly Israel had agreed to, he's going to lose his leadership. I think the two minor parties that support his leadership have said point blank that they would walk away from him. And he's going to try and run out the clock. I mean, they don't know yet what's going to happen in the U.S. presidential election, but certainly the relationship is very different between him and Trump than it is between him and Biden. And, you know, so there's so many other factors in play here. It's just to me that the thing that is so tragic about it is that it's civilians who are paying the price for all of this.
We'll take a quick break. We'll return right after this and go to the BBC. We'll be back with our panel after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Ira Fussfeld, Heather Mulligan, and Judy Patrick joining us on this Thursday morning. Tomorrow's Friday. Today's Thursday. It is the 6th of June. Let's go to some letters. Mike writes that the good guys don't shoot through the human shield. They find another way. Are we not allowed to talk about the fact that there are some in the Israeli leadership that are open about eliminating the Palestinians altogether? We know Hamas leadership wants to destroy Israel. We need a more frank discussion. Lloyd writes, the Israel government and the IDF lie all the time. That in shouty caps and in bold. Please stop accepting their statements as true. Then we go to Diane. Does Israel still have Mossad? Wasn't that the group that infiltrated to take down groups like Hamas? Then we go to Charles. We didn't win World War II by avoiding civilian deaths. Israel needs to do what it needs to do. Wiping out Hamas will save more lives than it costs. All right. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. One of the other things that I would like to just quickly mention is today is the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Veterans of the pivotal Battle of World War II are obviously disappearing and passing on. Europe facing new conflict recalls what they actually were fighting for in that. And it is a sobering day, but a day to think about of what occurred 80 years ago.
I went to the World War II Museum in New Orleans, which I recommend anybody go to. It's a great museum, earlier this year, and it really brought home for me again the impact of that war and how America rose up so quickly and so bravely to help fight this terrible war in Europe and in you know in the Pacific as well. It just shows how we all came together as a country. I noticed that Mitch McConnell has an op-ed in the papers today,
yep,
talking about the need for America to build up our military infrastructure again and to be ready and to not be caught flat-footed as we were after Pearl Harbor. My mother used to call me when I ran a newspaper. My mother would always call me the night before just to make sure that I had a reference to both Pearl Harbor Day and D-Day in the paper the next day because it was important, because it shouldn't be forgotten. Now, she's gone now, but it's something that I want to continue, that I think this young generation needs to understand D-Day and how important it was to the history of the free world.
I was in France when I was 16, and I was able to visit one of the cemeteries where U.S. soldiers who were killed in World War II are buried. And it made a huge impression on me because it is so massive. And they are, you know, very precise about how they lay the headstones. And so you can stand at one point and look down a row and see on the diagonals and the diagonals. And I mean, just hundreds, if not thousands, of headstones.
I think that the place where the president spoke today is 9,000 plus people.
Yeah. I mean, it really does make quite an impression that, you know, this huge sacrifice was made. But our view of the military, pride in the U.S. was very different. I hesitate to use the word patriotism because there are certain folks who think that, you know, means, I don't know, ultra right. But it really made a very big impression on me at 16. And my son is in France right now visiting Paris. And I asked him if he had a chance, you know, to see if he can go visit one of these cemeteries just so he gets a sense of it. Because I think that a lot of that, it was long ago for a lot of people, and they don't realize that the huge role that the U.S. played.
Oh, yeah, the goodwill generated was immense and remains so to this day. Whenever I go to France, people will, if I'm American, especially if they're older, they will just, you know, they want to hug me, they want to thank me to this day. And I think they are doing a good job of teaching the younger generation about how important. What are you laughing at?
The French, known for their kindness and welcoming.
especially, I know, I thought that they would be aloof, rude, but once they found out I was an American, man, they wanted to know if any members of my family were in the war. They wanted to talk about it a lot. This one lady, she on, you know, Victory Day, she rode a U.S. tank a lot and kissed a lot of U.S. soldiers. I mean, this was real, and this remains so to this day.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Last night I was going through stories and I was doing it on my telephone, which obviously is much smaller and as far as seeing the pictures and so forth. And I have trifocals, but I usually get by. But I was looking at the story of GOP blocking a contraception bill in the Senate as Democrats seek political edge. That is the headline of the story in the New York Times. And then there's a photo. And I was like, what the hell is that photo? I could not figure out what the hell the photo was. And I was looking and I was like, it was odd. It was like they were on a cruise ship or something. I have no idea. So it wasn't until I went to the main article that it says that Hannah Tuohy and Meghna Ravi are posing in front of an inflatable IUD displayed by Americans for Contraception in Washington on Wednesday. I was like, okay, that's what
that
was.
I'm afraid to tell you what I thought it was. Certainly not
a contraception, right?
No, I don't know. I was watching the Phillies last night, and my wife was working, and all of a sudden she just hears me say, "Oh, it's an IUD." I get it. All right. So anyway, the story is the Senate Republicans on Wednesday blocked action on legislation to codify the right to contraception access nationwide. A bill Democrats brought to the floor to spotlight an issue on which the GOP is at odds with a vast majority of voters. All but two Republicans present, Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, voted against advancing the legislation. Democrats who unanimously supported it were left 9 votes short of the 60 they would need to take up the bill, which would protect a reproductive health option that many voters worry is actively at risk of being stripped away. Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat of Washington, said this should be an easy vote.
Kabuki. I call kabuki. This is theater. This is political theater. They brought it up knowing
they know it's a weak issue
for
the Republicans.
Right.
So you bring it up.
Yep.
You make a big deal about it.
Right.
And then you talk about it till the fall.
Right. And maybe it spurs some getting something on a ballot referendum in a swing state to bring out your voters to kind of recreate what happened in the midterms, right? That people are fired up about an issue, and at that time we're fired up about reproductive rights. So this is a, you know, this is from the playbook. I mean, there's no House bill here that matches it. There was no chance this was ever going to become law. The bill, and I think there was an alternative proposal put forth by Republicans that the Democrats rejected. So, I mean, this is just kabuki, and this kind of stuff, I think, undermines the credibility of the legislators because they're just trying to make a point. You know, if you want to get someone on the record whether or not they support access to contraception, maybe just ask them.
Well, you could just ask them, but they'll dodge the question. I agree with you that it's political theater, that they're trying to get Republicans on the record one way or the other about whether or not they support reproductive rights for women. But as usual, it's the details that really matter. When you talk, I think there are some elements of contraception that people who on the far right will go after. I think the day after pill, for an example, is one where a lot of people who believe that life begins at conception, they believe that essentially is an abortion. There are people, IVF treatments, if you go through that process and you have 10 fertilized eggs, there will be people out there who will say all 10 of those fertilized eggs need to be given a chance. So we need to have these kinds of discussions. The Democrats, we're just trying to put people on the record. I agree. Just ask them, but just answer the question. Tell me, are you in favor of continuing to allow people to use the day after pill? Are you in favor of continued development of IVF treatments? Unless they're very clear about asking the question and getting answers, I understand why these kind of issues come before Congress.
So is the kabuki going to work? And I don't disagree with your characterization of it, nor your point, Judy, about let's just find out and ask them. I mean, that all makes sense to me. But nevertheless, they're doing it. They're bringing it up for all the reasons that you described. And is it going to be beneficial long term for the Democrats? Because Lord knows they need an issue that they can start holding the fort on. And we know that the Roe issue is one that supposedly is going to, at least allegedly, is going to motivate women to come to the polls and vote for Biden. Is this kind of stuff that happened this week with this bill effective the way they've ran it out, or is it just going to be people who are going to turn their backs and say a pox on both your houses?
I mean, if they create the impression that access to contraception is at risk, it could be effective, I think. I'm not suggesting that there's not people out there who won't, you know, kind of fall for it. But I think if you look at what happened in Arizona, you'll see, like, the Republicans, again, I've said this before, they were the dog that caught the car with the Supreme Court case overturning Roe. They don't know what to do with it. They never had to be accountable for the positions that they took, and now they do, right? So I think for one second that as broadly speaking, a lot of Republicans would support a ban on access to contraception? Absolutely not. I mean, you saw the outcry in Arizona after their Supreme Court decision around IVF. I think it was IVF, right? Or yeah, it was
yes,
IVF.
IVF.
Yeah. And you know, they fixed it because it's a very, very fraught issue for them. But you're right. There are people who will oppose a morning after pill, who will oppose, and they should. It should be clear and on the record so voters can vote. If that's an issue that matters to them, they can vote on that issue.
Right. I think the issue is not so much falling for the possibility. I think it's a real possibility. My generation grew up thinking, oh, the right to abortion is codified in a Supreme Court case, and then it evaporated. It went away. It's not. That right has been shattered. So the prospect of being denied access to contraception, I think, is real. And who knows how far it could go. I agree. I think it would probably just be something like the day after pill, I think, because when that first got approved, there was a real debate about it. And I think it has become a go-to source of contraception, especially for a lot of young people. And I would hate to see that go away, because once that go away, they're going to need abortions, and perhaps they're not going to be able to get them in the state in which they live.
I just keep thinking, whether it's this issue or any number of other issues, that we're, the country is just, and the legislative branch of the country is just spinning out of control, and it's going to be very hard to rein in the opposing factions, and it's going to be very hard to find somebody who we would traditionally call a moderate, and for that moderate to find allies to try to guide this country back on a path of sanity. And I'm afraid when you turn on the TV and you see Marjorie Taylor Greene battling with Fauci, who I generally is I believe a very respected person in this country, or you see any of the other I can't remember which hearing it was, but it's just they're just off the rails, and I don't know if the more they remain off the rails, it's harder to bring them back into the rails. I think it's just a very rocky period that we're going through, and it's very distressing.
I blame the primary system.
The primary system.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I would blame gerrymandering as before the primary system.
There's plenty of blame to go around here, isn't there?
Yeah.
and part of the problem is that a lot of people are just not paying attention. They're not watching those hearings and seeing the dysfunction. They're tuned out.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up the show. And with our panel, we welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. This morning, we have about 8 or 9 minutes left. A great group, Ira Fussfeld, Heather Mulligan, and Judy Patrick. We welcome you. panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. All right. We didn't talk about this yesterday. I want to talk about it today, where the governor of New York State, Kathy Hochul, who was once pushing for congestion pricing in Manhattan, has now decided to delay that. It was a last-minute reversal. Wants to postpone the plan to charge motorists to enter Manhattan's business district, and now is citing fears that it may not work, and it will hurt the city's economy. Heather?
Yes. Thank you.
I'm sure this has been on your radar.
Oh, very much so. I'm just going to say a couple things. One, the timing of the implementation of congestion pricing was very bad for Democrats. I believe, from what I understand, that this was done at the request of the Democrat, actually maybe Hakeem Jeffries, because they're concerned that they're not going to pick up the seats in the Hudson Valley that they need to regain the majority in the House. So there's some very hardball politics in play. There's a lot of opposition to this. And the timing is also very bad because we don't have everyone coming into work anymore in the city since the pandemic. New York has been delayed. So you've got offices that are empty. And if you're going to charge for people to come in, it's going to be an incentive for more people to work remotely. And it's happening at the same time that there's a play to, start a competing stock exchange in Texas, where it's much more business friendly. And it just kind of points to New York's strength, which is financial services industry. We're the only state where financial services is the largest contributor to GDP. It is the reason why New York has some of the highest taxes paid into the federal government and collected by state government. We are at risk of losing that. So there's all these moving parts. But in the article, there's one very scary little highlight, which is maybe we'll look at a business tax on businesses in New York City instead of a commuter tax. The problem with that is there's already a business tax. There's a payroll tax, the MTA payroll tax, which is paid by employers in this area that raises billions of dollars. So basically what they're saying is we're just going to raise taxes on businesses that are here in order to pay for the MTA rather than the commuters and the people who are coming into the city in vehicles rather than using the MTA. So it is a hot mess. This is a disaster for probably everyone involved. And I can tell you there's a large part of the business community in New York City that is very supportive of congestion pricing. If it truly is just a delay to get past the election, so be it. But if there's a plan B that involves raising the taxes on businesses to pay for it, they're already paying. So
you say the businesses are in favor?
There's a large part of the business community in New York City that is supportive of congestion
even though,
pricing.
Even though it would hit their employees, many of them, very hard?
Yeah, I think that is the case. I mean, it's the New York City Partnership, which is the basically the CEO roundtable for New York City, very influential organization. They strongly supported and worked on the congestion pricing proposal because the alternative is the system falls apart or the taxes fall on the shoulders of businesses, which is it's an employer tax. It's a payroll tax. So it's not when you tax employees, you get less of them. That's just, you know, that's how taxes work.
Well, I thought the timing was particularly interesting. I was interested to hear why you think that is, because Hochul, as recently as what, last week or 2 weeks ago, is at giving speeches in favor of this thing, and now all of a sudden she turns the other way. So I don't think, whether or not you think it's a good decision, it just strikes me as it comes across as very precipitous for her to make that decision as quickly as she seemingly did. I mean, the opposition from the lawmakers in the Hudson Valley, and it is considerable, it did not just emerge overnight. So.
Right.
And I don't know what I think about congestion pricing, but because, as you know, it would generate revenues for the city that is earmarked for a number of important projects, and that the elimination of perhaps some of the traffic into Lower Manhattan as a result would be beneficial for the environment, et cetera. But it is a hit on employees. If you live in New Jersey and you're not only paying for the George Washington Bridge toll, and now you have to pay another toll to go to work. What does that come to? $75 or $100 a week?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of it is a desire to get people to use public transportation. Yeah. The timing is very much related to upcoming elections.
Yeah.
I think there's no, and session ending, right? So session is ending this week. If you were going to put forth an alternative proposal, you got to do it by pretty much tomorrow.
Right.
I think there's a way to, you know, run out the clock, suspend it, and then maybe resurrect it after the elections are over, which would it sounds very cynical of me, but I think that is a possibility. What I think spurred it, honestly, is I think that there's some polling that shows that they're at risk of not picking up the seats that they were banking on.
You know, it's reflective of bad government, I think.
We've
talked about congestion pricing for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, this had been studied and restudied, and the impacts were analyzed and revised, and millions of dollars have already been spent on the equipment needed to implement this. Things like a waste of money, a waste of time. I was in Greece in Athens. They do it as simply as odd and even days on license plates. On one day, only odd numbered license plates can be in the city, and the other day it's, you know, even. It can be simply implemented. I have never driven in Manhattan. I don't relish the idea, but
It's a treat.
Yeah. You know what's even more fun is if you get towed, which has happened to me.
Oh, you have to go to the west side
and
find your
car. Oh,
I would love
so bad.
To see the environmental impact studies on this, because they must have done those and analyzed all this. To have it pulled at the last minute seems bad politics and bad government.
We got to wrap it all up. My thanks to everybody for being with us this morning. Got a lot of good stuff in. My thanks to Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, Heather Mulligan. Thank you very much. Judy and Ira will now retire to the adjoining suite to do the media project.
We're going to go in there full bore.
Yes. You are free to go.
Well, thank you. I don't need to be bored.
We'll be back right after this.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC-FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ 103.3 Sharon, WAMC AM 1400 Albany.